this week is work anemias. But you can't forget what white cells look like. Okay? But I'm not going to ask you abnormal white cells, so don't put leukemia as an answer this week, okay? We haven't even done that yet.
Yeah.
So guess an anemia. But I still will ask you abnormal white cells because you're doing abnormal dips.
So can we just write anemia?
No. You have to be very specific. So mostly case studies. So lots of pictures again. So is this where we are? Okay. It's been so long. Okay. So we were talking about the laboratory tests that you would do in order to try to classify anemias. And we're talking about microcytic anemias today. So we're talking about lab tests that will help us with that as well. So we talked about serum iron, and I gave you the precautions, I think. Okay, we talked about the next TIBC, which is total iron binding capacity. That's the total amount of iron that could be carried by transferrin. So it's a measurement of the maximum concentration of iron that serum proteins can bind. And it's given in micrograms per deciliter. So I think I said that normally one-third of transferrin is bound with iron, right? Okay. If it's, what we do is we have to have this value in order to calculate percent saturation. So we find that the total iron binding capacity, if you don't have enough iron, one of the things the body does is tell the liver to make more protein so that you can have more cars to carry iron. So that's what it does. So if you are iron deficient, IDA, then you're going to make more transferrin, and you measure that by looking at TIBC. So it's going to be increased in hepatitis because your liver is producing protein and also iron deficiency. It's going to be decreased in anemia of chronic disease, anemia of neoplastic disease, hemolytic anemia, chronic liver disease. And we're going to talk about these. It could be normal in those as well. That's why we put normal to decreased. It is definitely decreased in hemochromatosis, which means too much iron. Okay, so we'll talk about that one. And nephrosis, which means you're losing proteins through your kidneys. Okay, so the binding protein in the blood is called transferrin. We don't measure transferrin directly usually, we just do an estimate. So if you take the TIBC times 0.7, that usually is a good estimate of how much transferrin in milligrams per deciliter that you have. It's not something that we do often, but you could estimate that. Probably one of the most important things would be how much of the transferrin is saturated with iron. And so we take the iron level, we divide by the TIBC, and we take it times 100, so it's in a percentage, and that gives us the percent saturation. And so about one-third is normal, so 15 to 30, 15 is really low, so maybe 33% would be ideal. So maybe 20 to 50 is what most books say is normal. So if we look at percent saturation, we can determine that. We also could look at latent iron binding capacity, and that's just a reserve binding. It tells you the sites that aren't bound, so it's kind of an opposite of TIBC. So if you knew the total and you knew the latent, you could figure out how much was bound. Not very many people use this, but if you need to do it, it's the TIBC divided by the serum iron. And it's a special test where you're looking at unbound sites, what's left. Okay, one of the more important things we do is called ferritin levels. So ferritin is a protein that's called APO or apoferritin. And then when you add iron to that, you have ferritin. So apoferritin is just a naked shell of protein. When you add iron to it, it's called ferritin. So there are room for lots of iron particles in there, and it's a way that the body has of storing iron. So it's a storage form of iron. So you'll find it in lots of cells, but it's a way that the body can store up iron to make available when it's needed. So we see it increased in these kinds of things. We're going to see it increased in iron storage disease called hemochromatosis. But the thing about ferritin is if it's increased, it probably doesn't mean a whole lot unless you're looking for hemochromatosis, because there are so many things that would cause it to be increased. The best thing is what causes it to be decreased. And so it means that you have an iron deficiency, which could lead to iron deficiency anemia. So that's probably more important than increased, because anytime you have inflammation and, at all, it's going to increase this and probably makes the test not too reliable. So the big thing is decreased. It's in nanograms per deciliter. I don't know. It's 200 to 500 or something. Okay. If you have less, though, than about 13 milligrams per liter, then that's iron deficiency. So whatever it would be, it depends on the method you use, too. But if it's real low, that would be ferritin depletion. Okay, another one that we use maybe not too often, but it's easy to do, and they have it automated, so you could take it into a school or do it that kind of screening. It's called zinc protoporphyrin. And the zinc protoporphyrin really is a new measure of what we used to call free erythrocyte porphyrin. And so it's what they use it for really is to screen for lead poisoning. And so it's kind of a test that we could do. We usually use it for lead, but the way that it's set up, it gets elevated if you have iron deficiency. And so in an iron deficient condition, most of the protoporphyrin chelates the zinc instead of iron because you don't have iron there. And so the zinc protoporphyrin would bind, and it's kind of a fluorescent that you read. And so it's reported out as increased in iron deficiency. So it's called zinc protoporphyrin. So this is just a picture of the porphyrin compounds. And so in health, we're putting heme into this protoporphyrin ring. If you don't have any iron in this heme molecule, it's not iron protoporphyrin. All of a sudden, it's just blank. So if you add zinc to it, zinc just jumps right in there, and then that's what you measure, and that's why it's increased in iron deficiency.
That wouldn't happen in lead poisoning.
No, lead will block it. It blocks one of the enzymes. Okay, we can still measure free erythrocyte protoporphyrin. You'll see that in some books, and I'll show you some charts with it on. But again, it's just increased in iron deficiency anemia. Okay, so I just mentioned it. We'll talk about it in just a minute. So, oh, I forgot to do this. Got to get this up so you can vote. So storage or body iron is best represented by which one of those? Okay, so it's ferritin. How could you vote E? We don't have one. Pushed the wrong one, right? Okay. So now we're going to talk about all the anemias, and we're going to put them in drawers, remember? So that you have categories so that if it's microcytic, you guess certain things, and if it's macrocytic, you guess certain things. Okay, it cuts down your chances of getting things wrong a little bit if you get the right area. So we're going to talk about hypochromic anemias. So hypochromic means not enough color, okay? And it's a defective heme synthesis. So the one that's most common is iron deficiency anemia. All right, so when you eat food, most of the iron that you eat is in the ferric form. So it's the plus three. You do eat some ferrous, but most of it's in the ferric form. It goes down into your stomach, and in your stomach you have HCl. Okay, you can change with the HCl that's in your stomach. You can convert the ferric iron to ferrous iron. And then it travels through to the intestinal tract where it's going to be absorbed. In the intestinal tract, you have some enterocytes, which are the cells lining the intestinal tract. And they also have lots of proteins that can be involved in absorbing iron. So I took this out of your book, so you can go back to the book and look at that. But if the iron comes and it didn't get converted to the ferrous, this enterocyte can also help reduce ferric to ferrous, because iron has to be in the ferrous form in order to be absorbed into the mucosal cell. Then once it gets into the mucosal cell, there are other things that happen to it. If it's needed, it goes right straight out of the cell. But you can store ferritin in there as well. So it could go into the apoferritin core and be stored there. Or it can have some help getting to the other side of the cell with a protein. And it can go out of that into the lumen of the blood, the lymph system. Now, in order to be carried in the blood, it has to bind to transferrin. And transferrin has to carry ferric. So we got to change ferrous now back to ferric so it can bind with transferrin to be carried around the bloodstream. And so there is a molecule there that will do it. Hefestin oxidizes the ferrous to make it ferric. Okay? So this is what we've done so far. So we've got transferrin circulating in the plasma. Okay, it can go to the bone marrow. And in the bone marrow, you know that we had cells that would, the macrocytes in the bone marrow, that the nursing cells could surround so that they could take iron from the macrophage through pinocytosis. It's a specialized, which we called a really pretty name, rhophiocytosis. And some of the iron then gets put into the hemoglobin molecule. So it's circulating in the hemoglobin molecule, and it has to be in the what form? Ferrous. So it's got to change again. So even though transferrin's carrying the ferric, it's got to change to be the ferrous to be put into hemoglobin. Okay? Or it won't carry oxygen. So this is what we have to make these cells make hemoglobin. So if a person doesn't have enough iron, it's possible for them to have a decrease in hemoglobin or red cells, which by definition is called what? Anemia. And so if it's due to iron deficiency, we call it iron deficiency anemia. Okay, so what are the populations that get it? Well, infants. So unless you give infants iron supplement, they're breastfed forever with no supplements, they will have what's called milk anemia because they don't have enough iron. And so infants that have been breastfed with no supplements are going to be iron deficient.
How long are you talking about for that?
They usually supplement them pretty early. Christina, oh, she left. How long before you put them on iron supplement?
Well, I have to start doing it already because I'm anemic. I think 6 months.
Is it 6 months? I don't know if they even let them go that long yet, but
prior.
Yeah. I was going to say 3 to 4 months. Then you've got to give them iron. Okay?
How do you give it to them?
Infamil or whatever. Supplements. Little drops, too.
This is going back a little bit, but so once, you know, you get your ferric form and transparent eyes, get back to ferrous to be transparent.
Okay. It has to be an enzyme or a change in pH, but usually enzymes.
Isn't that same reductase?
Mm-hmm. But in a different place.
But it is the same reductase.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it probably is. There might be another one too. But they're dysreductases, whatever they are. So in infants, that's what you'd look for as the cause. Okay, so if you get a case history and the baby's been breastfed for 2 years with no supplements, you'd know what to do, right? Okay. Now, for males, the only way males really lose blood is through the GI tract. So if it's a male, you got to look at where they're losing blood. And it's very common for people to have ulcers or lesions in the GI tract where they're constantly losing a little bit of blood. So if it's a male, then think GI tract loss. If it's a postmenopausal woman, the same thing. Okay, that's the only way they're going to lose blood. If it's premenopausal, then you lose through menstruation.
So is this only for like chronic bleeding? So it's like you have like an acute bleed. It's not.
This is chronic. Chronic blood loss. Okay, patients with gastric resection. Okay, what that means is that sometimes they'll take some or most of the stomach out. If they do that, what happens to the HCl that was produced there? It's not there anymore. So how do you change ferric that you eat to ferrous? You probably need some HCl. So people that have a history of gastric resection could be iron deficient.
People with gastric bypasses?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, real quick question. Is menstruation just a contributing factor then? Because we see like half the world deals with that, so.
Yeah, but.
Not half the world is necessarily anemic.
Yeah, they are.
Really?
Yeah, quite a few.
Okay.
High percentage. Okay, so this is kind of a little chart that goes through what we call three stages of iron deficiency. Okay, this is the normal. So this shows you, this is the bone marrow that's kind of a yellow color. Okay, this is blood, so we're measuring iron for there. And this is blood, and we're measuring TIBC. And then this is the ferritin level, the green. And so in a normal person, you have all these in normal ranges. You have ferritin that we have stores. We go to the bone marrow. We make hemoglobin, hematocrit. It circulates, so everything's okay. Now, if you have what's called iron deficiency and not yet anemia, then we can go through these stages. So this is called iron depletion. So it means that our stores are going to be lost first. So our ferritin level goes down. So if you look here, here's the reserve. So this is going down. But usually if it goes down, you just become iron deficient. Okay, so you deplete your iron stores, and then it takes a little while for it to affect up here at the bone marrow. So the first thing you do is deplete your ferritin. So we're going to call that just iron depletion. So if we measured ferritin, it's going to be low. The serum iron might start to be low. The iron binding goes up because we want more cars, hoping we can carry more iron. So it'll go up. And we can get an increase in free erythrocyte porphyrin or protoporphyrin, but we won't worry about that too much. So the first thing is iron depletion, first stage. Okay, the next thing is iron deficient erythropoiesis. So now look at our reserve level. So we've used up every bit of reserve that we have. Okay, our serum iron's continuing to go down. Our TIBC is continuing to go up. But now it's affecting the red cells in the bone marrow. So now we start to make cells that are not having enough iron. So we're depleting, we're deficient as we start to make these cells. And remember what they looked like? Kind of a shaggy cytoplasm, smaller than normal. And so the next stage is the stage we can see when we actually test in the blood. So the third stage is this one right here, iron deficiency anemia. So when you're iron deficient and you really do have anemia, meaning a decrease in hemoglobin hematocrit, you've gone through this whole thing. So it takes a while to get there. So you're on the last stage when we actually pick it up, unless they measure ferritin. So here's your reserve, none. So you've made lots and lots of carbs, so your TIBC is really increased. Your iron's real low, but now it's affected the level of hemoglobin red cells. So you actually see the anemia when you do the CBC. So you see it has to develop over a period of time. So it doesn't happen all of a sudden. So for you to be anemic, you have no iron stores left. So this is the same kind of thing as a summary. So we look at the marrow, and these are the, in iron depletion, the first thing that goes is ferritin. Then we get iron deficient erythropoiesis, and then finally the anemia shows up. So unless we look for ferritin, we're not going to pick it up, probably. The first time we can pick it up is probably this, when we do the iron levels. And then finally, the last stage is when you look at the smear, it's microcytic hypochromic. So, wow, where did that go? Gotta see where it went. Well, it's there. Okay, do I have to push start? There it comes. Okay. So what protein is the carrier of iron in the blood? Oh, okay, I'll go back. Answer this one first.
Answer this one.
Okay, it is transferrin. Okay, most of the blood that we ingest is in what form? Most of the iron. We do that too.
If you're iron deficient or whatever, and you're taking iron supplements, and it doesn't make your iron deficiency and you can go change, is that a conversion problem?
No, it takes a long time to get the stores built up.
Like how long?
6 months, maybe. Okay, it is ferric. So we have to have some mechanisms to make ferrous. That's all we can absorb. Okay, so if you have iron deficiency, what are kind of the clinical features that you see in these people? Well, every cell that you have in your whole body needs iron. So every cell is going to be affected. So it's not just blood cells. So you can have anatomic changes. You can have inflammation of the tongue. You can have problem swallowing because there's a web that develops because of the problem with the cells in the back of the throat. So you can have respiratory symptoms. Many of these people have what we call achlorohydria because their cells in their stomach can't produce HCl. So A means without. Chlorohydria means without HCl. And so if you start to change the cells in your stomach and you don't make HCl, what's going to happen to the ferric iron? You bypass that one step. So if they have this very severe long-term iron deficiency, it's called the Plummer-Vinson syndrome. And that's where they have trouble swallowing, clearing their throat because there's a web behind their throat. It feels like it's kind of coated, so they clear their throat a lot. Difficulty in swallowing. Okay, they have fatigue. They have a problem exercising. They can't do it for very long. If it happens in a baby, they're going to have delayed growth. You feel really tired, that's lethargy. They get dizzy because they have a low hemoglobin hematocrit. They're kind of pale. And the paleness is kind of a green color, greenish white, because it used to be called chlorosis. And chlor referred to plants. And plants that don't have iron are not green, they're yellow. And so it's a chlorosis that you have. So here's an iron deficient female. They get the mucous membranes, the lips get really pale. You notice her hemoglobin was 8, her red cells 4.13, the hematocrit 27. But remember, the most important things are the indices. So if you see an MCV of 65, what size are the cells? Little, right? Okay, and our MCH was 19.6. So they have kind of a beefy, well, a tongue that may be swollen a little bit, inflamed, and they have coilonychia. Coilonychia means spoon nails. So if you look at your fingernails, they have these little dips in them because you need iron in every cell. Okay, they also have this urge to eat things like paint or dirt, or most of the people in this part of the United States like to crunch on ice. And that's called pica. So if you have this craving to crunch on ice all the time. It's called pagophagia. Okay, so this is called a green sickness because the pale they get is kind of a greenish pale color.
So we should
say the pica means that you won't have this craving to crunch something. And if you crunch ice, it's pagophagia. You can also eat dirt or whatever else you want. But.
Do they know why?
Not that I know. But starch, paint, you know. Okay, so what's happening in iron deficiency anemia? There's a deficient heme synthesis because we don't have iron to put in the middle. Okay, the cells that are made also aren't made right. They're not looking right, so you get ineffective erythropoiesis. They don't come out of the marrow. So you have this when you have, anytime you have iron loss. So pregnancy and menstruation are the two most common things. So pregnancy, I keep telling you, is pathologic. The baby's going to take the iron to be produced. So that makes the mom deficient. And then if it's not those two things, it's chronic blood loss, probably from the GI tract. There are times when you can't get enough iron, so like in a baby period of growth period and they don't have enough iron, or if you have the defective gastric function, if you don't have HCl that's being produced, achloroinhibin, or if they take out part of your stomach and you get a gastrectomy. Okay, so what do we see in the lab? Usually the white cells are not affected, but the platelets can be slightly increased, and they're usually little. So if you see increased platelets and they're tiny, it's one thing that goes along with it. So your hemoglobin, hematocrit are decreased. Your retic's usually normal, but if you've had something like a piece of liver to eat, your retic's will go up because it's an iron-rich thing. So if you've taken an iron pill every once in a while, it will increase the retic's. Okay, what you're going to look for is an increased RDW. So remember what RDW measures? Aneso. So you're going to have different sizes of cells. If you have a normal cell, a little cell. If you make a retic, it's going to be bigger, right? They also have a tendency to be more elongated, so we call them pencil or cigar cells. So this would be pretty typical of an iron deficiency anemia. So we've got our lymphocyte nucleus right here, but you can see that most of them are pretty small. But how we would tell is look at the MCV. So remember on this week's test, what do I tell you to do every time you get a case history? Figure the indices. Okay, here's another one, peripheral smear. This shows you some increase in platelets. I think you can see them. There's quite a few. So it might be a slight increase. But again, here's a lymphocyte, so you can tell what size they are if you don't have the MCV. So here's a really nice one right here. Look how little. And look at these. So can you tell those are hypochromic? Okay.
Do lymphocytes also get it right?
Do lymphocytes get... Nope, the white cells are usually normal.
Because it looked like there was hyperosignification.
Shouldn't be. That's for macrocytic. But can you tell those are females? So it's from a female? Because of this? Where is it? Right here? Right there. Okay. So what do we look in the bone marrow? What are you going to see in the bone marrow? Now, you know what? They used to do a bone marrow on everybody that they wanted to diagnose with iron deficiency. So thank goodness that practice has gone. Okay, but in the bone marrow, what you're going to look for is normoblastic. So they're not megaloblastic, they're normoblastic, but there's a lot of them. Okay? But they all have decreased or absent hemosiderin, which is what the storage form is that we stain, right, with Prussian blue. So we shouldn't see anything as far as Prussian blue being positive. So if we were to count the sideroblasts, we're going to have less than 10% sideroblasts. And our normal blasts are going to be smaller than normal, and they have that ragged rim of cytoplasm around the edges. So here's a bone marrow smear from a person that has iron deficiency. So look at the shaggy. Okay, look how shaggy they look. All of them are pretty sad looking. And here is a Prussian blue stain. So how much iron do you see? None. So it's negative. Okay, we want to confirm this with other laboratory studies, and so we do serum iron. It's going to be decreased. TIBC is increased. The percent saturation is going to be decreased, and usually it's less than 15% sat. Okay? We have a decreased ferritin, increases zinc protoporphyrin, and we can also measure now what's called a transferrin receptor, which is on the edge of the cell that's going to pull in the transferrin so it can let off its iron. But that's going to be increased because we make more receptors for more transferrin. So this is our scheme to do iron deficiency anemia. So we do our CBC, platelets, maybe, but this is what we look at most. Hemoglobin, hematocrit decreased, RDW increased, greater than 15. MCV, MCH, MCHC decreased. So then the next thing we do is the iron, the TIBC, the percent satch. We don't need to do this if we have these three. If that's all the way it should be, it's iron deficiency. So what you see on the smear is microcytic, hypochromic, pencil, or elongated red cells. So what do you do to treat it? The preferred treatment is just to give oral iron. And the form that's best is to take in ferrous iron. Because if you take in ferrous iron, you don't have to convert it to ferrous if you take in ferric. So ferrous sulfate is hard on your system, GI system. If you take ferrous glutamate, something like that, it's usually a little easier on the system. They also can give parenteral shots of iron, which they do if you don't get better. And the way that it's given is it's not a real pleasant shot. Has to be given in the largest muscle of your body, which is the gluteus maximus, is what we probably should say. And they have to be, when they do it, they have to do what's called a Z technique, So they stick the needle in and then pull the skin down and then inject it so it doesn't come back out. So it's not real pleasant to have an iron shot. So if I were iron deficient, boy, would I be taking ferrous glutamate or something, fumarate, so I wouldn't have to have a shot. You can also give IV iron. They do that. And so if your gut's not handling the iron, that's another way they'll give it to you. The only problem with doing that is a lot of people have an allergic reaction to it, so they don't like to do that. One thing that you should not do is they shouldn't transfuse them. And the reason they shouldn't transfuse them is it took them a long time to get this way, so they have adjusted to the anemia. And if you transfuse someone, you stop their bone marrow from producing more cells because they think they already have some. So that's one thing you do not want to do.
So during pregnancy, I was really iron deficient, and my hematocrit just kept going down, and I was taking iron, and they did IVs and whatever, and they almost did transfuse me.
Unless you're, you know, falling over and you can, it's not good. Because it suppresses the bone marrow.
But if...
if it gets down dangerously, yes.
Because they were, it was like a 20, my hematocrit was like a 25, and they were like, we're not sure yet, we're not sure if it keeps going down.
Yeah, it ought to get down further than that.
Yeah. I actually did get transfused.
For iron deficiency?
Yeah. I was only a 29, I think, actually.
29?
I have a tattoo right here that says no transfusion. And no bone marrows. Okay, if iron deficiency were suspected, which of the following would be found?
So does your fiancé know about the tattoo?
Some things you don't tell. Okay, what do you think? Okay, serum ferritin's decreased. What's your MCV going to be? Probably. Less than what?
80.
Okay. Okay, so that's iron deficiency. So let's do anemia of chronic disease or chronic disease anemia, whichever way you want to say it. So this means that you have a chronic disease, and because of the chronic disease, you become anemic. So what would be the things? Inflammatory diseases like LE or rheumatoid arthritis, something like that. Neoplastic diseases, so cancer of some kind. Sometimes an infectious state will do it. But you have it for a long period of time. So it's a chronic disease thing. Okay, so what happens? You get hypoproliferative anemia, which means that there's an impaired release of iron from the reticuloendothelial cells. So you can't make enough hemoglobin because you can't get the iron out of the cells. So it's a little bit different. You have enough iron there, you just can't get them into the red cells. So what you see in this condition is that the white cells and the platelets, it depends on what disease you have, what you might see in those. But the red cells, you have a decrease in hemoglobin hematocrit. The anemia that you have is either microcytic hypochromic or it's normocytic normochromic. And your retics are normal to slightly increased. So if you looked at a peripheral smear, this one happens to be microcytic hypochromic because you can see the nucleus of the lymphocyte. So how are you going to distinguish this from iron deficiency? And this is where... Pardon? Okay, this one happens to be microhypo. So you'd have to distinguish that from iron deficiency. So you could do a bone marrow if you wanted on these people. But again, that wouldn't be my first choice. But if you did, they would have normal to increased hemosiderin. And in iron deficiency, you have decreased, right? So you have a decrease in sideroblast because it's in the reticuloendothelial cell still. So you're staining it, but it can't get out into the sideroblast. So it'd be easier to do chemistry studies. So you do have a decrease in serum iron, but now you have a normal or decreased TIBC. So when you divide your serum iron by TIBC, it's going to give you a percent saturation that might be slightly decreased, below 20, but it's usually greater than 15. So the best way to tell is look at the TIBC. And then you can measure the ferritin, which really helps you because it's going to be normal or increased. So again, here's your scheme. So what you're going to see on the smear is microcytic hypochromic or normocytic normochromic. But you're going to have anemia, so your hemoglobin hematocrit is going to be decreased, but your RDW is normal. So what was it in iron deficiency?
Increased.
Okay, your MCV is going to be low or normal. Then you do your iron studies. Okay, your TIBC is going to be increased. Your ferritin is going to be increased or normal. Okay, your percent saturation is going to be usually greater than 15. And your serum iron is going to be low, but this is going to tell you have anemia of chronic disease, not iron deficiency. So they may look the same on the smear, but you got to have other information. So what do? Whatever disease they have, they treat that. Okay, in distinguishing iron deficiency from anemia of chronic disease, which of the following is the most valuable? Okay, the percent sat, because it's usually greater than 15 and iron deficiency is usually less than 15. Okay, another one fits in this category. It's called sideroblastic anemia. And sideroblastic anemia is a failure, again, of protoporphyrin and heme synthesis. This one's also called iron loading anemia or siderocrystic anemia. Same things. So what do we see in this one? Well, they have swollen livers and spleens, and there's two types of inherited, and then there's an acquired type. So the inherited type, there's an X-linked type and an autosomal type. The X-linked type, they've classified into two different groups, whether or not it responds to B6. So pyridoxine responsive or pyridoxine refractory. So all they do is give a shot of B6 and see if it responds. The acquired types, one, we don't know the cause, so we call it idiopathic. And now they've classified that as part of the myelodysplastic syndromes. So when Keela comes in 2 weeks, she'll tell you about the myelodysplastics. But RARS is refractory anemia with ringed sideroblasts. And it fits in to this category a little bit. But mostly, if it's not that, it's secondary to something else. So it could be lead poisoning, it could be ethanol usage, it could be certain drugs, it could be inflammatory disease. There's just a lot of different areas. So what's the problem in sideroblastic anemia? The problem is you can't make heme synthesis correct. So they die in the bone marrow, so you have ineffective erythropoiesis. So something is going on that you can't get it into the protoporphyrin ring. There's a failure of the protoporphyrin heme synthesis. So since you can't get it in there, it stays in the tissue. So you have an increase in tissue iron. So if we look in the microscope, we're going to see the same kind of thing, microcytic hypochromic. So now we got to figure out, how can we tell this from iron deficiency from anemia of chronic disease? Well, this is the one that has dimorphism. So you're going to see some normal cells and some microcytic hypochromic or hypochromic cells. So your RDW is going to be increased because you have small and you have normal. So that's not going to help you with iron, right? Iron deficiency, because that's the same. So now you look at the retics. They're the same. So you got to look for something else. So we've never talked about basophilic stippling with iron deficiency or anemia of chronic disease. So basophilic stippling tells us there's a problem with synthesis. And also we can look for Pappenheimer bodies. So if you see those, that's real helpful. So here shows you dimorphism. You can see some that are hypochromic and some that aren't. Okay. What are the right here? Pappenheimer bodies. So if you saw that big cell with those things in it, you wouldn't call it iron deficiency or anemia of chronic disease. But see how your eye has to be trained to see things? Are you hallucinating good yet? Okay. So what do you see in the bone marrow? You're making lots of cells, so you have erythroid hyperplasia, and you're going to have large numbers of sideroblasts. And they're going to have these iron deposited in the mitochondria clear around the cell. So you have an increase in the number of ringed sideroblasts. And you also have increase in iron in the cells, so you'd see Prussian blue positive. So here's the Prussian blue. And we count the number of ringed sideroblasts. But in this disease, they're going to be increased. So see all the ringed sideroblasts? If you have ringed sideroblasts, are you going to have iron deficiency anemia? No. If you have anemia of chronic disease, you can have hemosiderin, but you don't see the ringed sideroblasts. Okay? So you're going to have an increase in serum iron. You see increase in serum iron in either iron deficiency or chronic disease? You see decrease. Okay, so that'll help you. Now you got a normal or increased saturation. Do you see that in either one of the others? You have decreased. And you have an increase in serum ferritin. So can you see how you tell those three apart? So here's our scheme. So we have a decrease in hemoglobin hematocrit. We have dimorphic red cells. We look for Pappenheimer bodies. They're going to do a bone marrow on these kind of people. You're going to see increase in ring sideroblasts. That puts it in sideroblastic. Okay, you do your iron studies, the serum iron's increased. So that helps you there. Okay, so what do they do? If it's secondary, whatever they were on, they're going to take them off of it. So if it's a drug, if they're using ethanol, you tell them to quit drinking. Whatever it is, they get them away from that. Then remember that some of these people are X-linked and they have it inherited-wise. So they're going to give them pyridoxine. 50% will correct their anemia just by giving them B6. So that's easy. So here's a congenital sideroblastic anemia in a 42-year-old patient. His hemoglobin was 12. His MCV was 72. MCH 22. Anemia became more severe despite treatment with pyridoxine, so they gave him everything to see if they could figure out what it was. But it's an inherited disorder. It did not respond to pyridoxine. So, you know, if it's inherited, what can you do? You got to treat. But there's not much you can give as far as treatment. So transfusions probably. Here's a sideroblastic anemia in a 17-year-old. She again had congenital, so it's the autosomal type. She needed regular transfusions because it's inherited, so she had iron overload because of too many transfusions. Okay, so that brings us to a couple of definitions in 20 seconds. Hemosiderosis means you've got hemosiderin in the tissue and there's varying amounts. It's a condition where you start to store iron. Hemochromatosis is a serious disorder where your tissues start to overload with iron, and then you become pigmented with that iron. And the iron deposits in the liver, in the spleen, and in the pancreas. So you get this color of kind of a bronze color because of the iron in the skin, but you also get cirrhosis of the liver because it ruins the liver. And you get diabetes because it ruins the pancreas. So it's called bronze diabetes.
Can that be caused by oral intake of iron as well?
Take a lot. It's usually something wrong in the intestinal tract, so it's an inherited problem. Okay, so hemosiderosis is a condition where you have iron, but hemochromatosis is a disease. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. Okay, so you get to go do lab now.